Stuff Is Ready podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good. Aiden Brown. Got it. Three.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast presented by CelticsLife.com. My name is Ben Vallis. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. It's been a rough week for the Celtics and their fans. They've gone 2 of 3, including losses to the Pistons, the Wizards, and now the Hawks. The fan base is divided as to how to react, what to do, where to go from here. So, got a lot to get to tonight. Joining us, our New Zealand correspondent, Joe, aka No Scrolls McFly. Welcome back, sir. How's things?
Oh, good. Good. I seem to have kept my head below the Reddit parapet, and I'm not getting into the... I'm not getting any feedback, so I'm pretty happy for that.
Well, that time is about to come to an end because we've got a lot of Reddit content collated and ready to throw at you. We've also got the man, the myth, Larbird33. Welcome back, sir. How's things?
Good. You should introduce me as a token American. That's who I am. Token on this American.
Sure. Well, we need one. You know, it's an American sport after all, so we're very glad to have you.
We've got sort of a Pacific Rim thing happening here, really. We just need someone from Japan.
It's a global organization. What can I say?
And we'll have it sorted. Maybe someone from, I don't know, like Santiago or something like that.
Boston, yeah. Even?
Well, that's Atlantic, so doesn't sort of work with the whole
time zone thing.
Yeah. But that would actually be quite good.
That would be nice. Yeah, it would be nice. So I don't even really know where to begin with all this. Let's just start here. Let's go broad and sort of narrow it down from there. How actually worried are you about this team? Is it time to give up hope for a decent playoff run, or is there hope yet?
There's definitely hope, right? Like, even in the 18-19 season, there was still hope, man. Like,
but what we learned then was that the hope was misguided. Really, there was no hope to be had at all, and we're all fools. So
it's still a super talented team. Like, it definitely, you know, they definitely could have. I mean, they won 5 straight. They swept the Pacers and they won the first by like 30 against the Bucks, right? Like, it's not like it was impossible for them to do it again. There's always room for hope. I think if as a fan, you stop hoping, honestly, that's at the point where you generally stop being a fan. You've always got to have something to hope for, you know, and I'm not even trying to get too existential here, but like, you know, just in our fantasy little world where our team plays these little games, you still want to be able to hope that they're going to be able to do it a little better. Like, that's why you're a long-term fan, you know?
What do you think, Labed?
No, I'm not panicking. I'm not worried. The difference to me between 2 seasons ago and this season is that we obviously struggled a lot 2 seasons ago, but it wasn't clear how we were going to get out of that. Last, you know, 2 seasons ago, we had Kyrie Irving, who, as much as you want to, you know, shit on him, and I want to shit on him, he was still playing as he was still playing at an all NBA level. But beyond him, like, there was no clarity on what that roster was. There was just so many guys that you wanted to step up, but you had like Marcus Morris, who was taking opportunities from Jason Tatum. You had 2 of the guys that we thought were going to be all-stars were relegated to our bench. So, I mean, it was, you know, Terry Rozier was sulking on the bench. It was just like this weird mix of too many guys, and it wasn't clear how you could get out of that. Like, I remember when we were struggling at the peak of our struggles, I had said something to the extent of, let's just put Hayward and Brown in there, and just, like, for better or worse, let's see what happens, because I don't see us reaching our peak without these 2 guys contributing. And it got a lot of pushback. People were like, how are you going to take, you know, Marcus Morris out? He's been one of our better players. You know, how are you going to, you know, minimize the role of Marcus Smart or minimize the role of Al Horford? That was, I mean, that team, we just didn't know what we could do with it. It was just like, as much as we wanted to be a 4-star team, it just wasn't. It was a 1-star team. And the difference with this team, to me, is we, at the very least, know it's Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown's team. It's those 2 guys. Kemba, once he's healthy, is our 3rd guy. And then, I know we've been saying it now every episode of this, but then it's just about who else steps up. And I feel like, you know, it's been a theme this entire season that we've talked about on this podcast, is showcase season. Like, I'm not worried because all the stuff that we talked about and expected to happen is happening. We're having 15 guys kind of giving minutes here and there, and we're trying to figure out what this roster is. But really, eventually, we're going to tighten up the ship, tighten up the rotation to 8 guys. And we'll probably be a lot better once that happens.
So, yeah, I think that makes sense. But, you know, considering all the noise online at the moment, and people don't generally go online to share praise. People go online to complain. So, you know, we're hearing majority complaints from fans at the moment. When do you think this showcase period ends? And when do you think we start to steer the ship towards playoff success and success in longevity in seasons going forward? Is this going to last the whole season? Is this not a team that's in any sort of deep playoff contention? Or at some point, you know, are the Celtics going to decide, okay, enough of showcasing, it's time to focus on winning games and hopefully winning playoff games?
Well, historically, it's always been the early seasons that Brad was our coach, and maybe not so much the last couple, but the early seasons that he was our coach, we would always spend the first half of the season just experimenting. I mean, that was always the case. We would experiment, we'd throw out lots and lots of lineups. And again, this might be something we brought up in a previous podcast, but I think the guy's name is Drew Cannon. I think that's his stat guru. They brought over from Butler. And the whole idea there is, I mean, the Celtics had an edge because of all the advanced stats they looked at. And they've kind of admitted that they spend that first part just throwing out lots of different lineups, experimenting, seeing who pairs well. And then in the second half of the season, they've always tightened up the ship. They've always tightened up the rotation and then used all that data that they've collected to figure out what the rotations are. And that's what I've expected all season with this team. I mean, there's so many question marks on this team. It is a very, very, very young team. And from night to night, you don't really know, you know, who's going to step up. You know, Grant Williams is a good example of someone who might have a lot of potential, maybe, but some nights he's getting DMPs, some nights he's getting minutes. Aaron Nesmith, the last few games, has finally started getting minutes. And there's, like, you know, Semi is making leaps, you know, he's making progress in his progress, you know, in his ability. But it just, across the board, everyone on the team, it's kind of just like, let's see what they do, let's see how they pair, and then let's figure out, at least mid-season, you know, are we going to keep these guys or are we going to make a trade? And I really do think, you know, I keep hearing people say that, you know, Danny, for years, has not made a trade at the trade deadline. I think this, of any year, this is a year he probably will. I mean, I think we're just looking at what we have, and I more than likely think that we're going to end up making some kind of move. It might not be a big one, but there's probably going to be a move. And I really do think that as much as we want to, like, trash Brad for his lineups right now, we have to experiment. We have to see what these guys are. We have to do our due diligence and at least give the team an opportunity to explore all their options at the trade deadline, which is like a month away.
Ben, I feel like I've had this yarn maybe 2 years ago, but have we had like a hopes versus expectations yarn?
I feel like we have some form of that almost every week.
Why? So, well, I just want to throw it back at you a little bit. So you asked, you know, the initial question was, is it time to give up hope yet? That's one question. Another question is it time to recalibrate expectations? So you can pick the question that you want to answer, or you can pick both, but they are different questions.
I almost see them as the same question. Like, if I'm going to give up hope, therefore I'm then going to recalibrate my expectations. Like, one almost leads into the other.
You can always hope, man. You can always hope for something. Expectations is a different beast entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you're right. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm as reactionary as the rest of the people online. Expectations change per quarter, per game. You know, like, if Tatum has a poor first quarter, which he often does, it takes him a while to ramp up some momentum there. I feel like my impression of Tatum and his value to the team changes that rapidly. So that's just the nature of sports fandom, right? So, yeah, expectations have not been... Probably, I guess to answer your question in some way, my expectations have been far more inconsistent throughout the course of this season than they have been in seasons prior. I feel like they almost are dangling, you know, reasons to change your expectations or reasons to increase or decrease our levels of hope throughout the season. And a lot of that has been because of COVID and postponed games and, you know, Tatum. And we've now learned that he's still feeling the lingering effects of his, you know, COVID that he was out for 2 weeks with. Marcus Smart broke a guitar string in the back of his leg. Kemba is, you know, we've talked about that already. It's hard to, like, nail down your expectations, right? And therefore, it's hard to maintain any level of hope. Does that answer your question? Does that resonate with you?
Man, I don't want to get too, like, deep on you here, bro, but like,
please,
hope.
Let's dig.
But like, put simply, like, hope is what might be, expectations is what probably will be, and you've got, they've got to be distinct categories in your head, man. So like, you know, am I giving up hope? Hell no. Like, I'd never give up hope on my, like, hope on my team. I mean, yeah, I look, your hope is somewhat influenced by your expectations, but hope is like the best possible outcome, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Your expectations is the most likely. So you know, I definitely haven't given up hope at all. I have very, very strong reasons to recalibrate expectations.
Yeah, so I was just curious what your expectations were. It's a great question, Joe.
Yeah.
So I fundamentally, I guess I didn't think that the loss of Haywood would seem to so, because it's really all that we lost, right? I mean, we lost Wanamaker as well, I suppose, but like,
and gained Jeff Teague.
Everything's so different, and even with those two guys, and Haywood was out injured like for such a long period of time last year, and I've been really surprised at how poor we are defensively. Like, we just seem so unimpactful defensively, and Haywood going is really the only change. And I know Smart's been out, and it'll be better when he gets back, but it hasn't been right all year. It just hasn't been right. And that is what's causing my expectations to change a little bit, because if we're mediocre defensively, like, we're just always going to be sort of in these games because our offense is okay, and never and only get over the hump half the time, which is what's happening. You know, I think this 14-14 record is very representative of who we are. I really do. So as a result, my expectations, like what I think's most likely, I think what's most likely is probably a tough first round loss, like, yeah, deep into the first round. That's what my expectations are, and that's a backward step, right,
mm-hmm,
relative to my expectations at the start of the year. And I think I'm sort of trying to calibrate my long term expectations for Jalen and Jason. Who are they really? What sort of a duo are they? Are they type of guys that really impact winning, or are they? And as we've sort of said in the chat, like, are they like kind of Stackhouse and Hill, you know, late 2000s Pistons,
mm-hmm,
like dynamic scorers, but and teams are playoff teams, but not like the real thing. Like, I know, I think Larry has a different perspective on it though.
Joe, I was curious, going into the season, how far did you expect the team to go? You know, from a playoff perspective, did you think they were going to get to the finals, Eastern Conference Finals again? Like, if you were going to peg it, what was your expectation heading in?
Anything short of a very competitive second round loss was a disappointment.
Okay.
That's, yeah, how I put it.
How about you, Ben? What was yours?
Yeah, probably the same. With I guess it comes back to the difference between expectations and hope. So definitely expected us to make the second round and be competitive in the second round. So very similar to Joe there. I hoped that both Jays would take a step up, Kemba would come back healthy, and the Teague and Thompson signings would yield better results, and that might birth us another Eastern Conference Finals challenge, but doesn't seem to be going in that direction, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, if I was looking at what my expectations were, you know, we came off a season where we played about, you know, we won 48 games, but it was a shortened season, so it's about a 54 win pace. And
great math, bro.
We arguably
math respect from Joe there.
We arguably outperformed expectations. You know, had we met the Bucks earlier in the playoffs, we probably would have lost in the second round last year. So I do see the team as a contender last season, and I see them a contender. I still see them as a contender. I see them as a team that should be competing for a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I really felt like we blew a huge opportunity where everything aligned to us to potentially get to the finals last year, and that wasn't necessarily what I saw the team as, which is didn't see them as a team that could coast to the championship or coast to the finals. Like, we got lucky that we had Miami as our draw, and we should have beat them. But I really don't know if we really should have made the Eastern Conference Finals, to be honest. I mean, I would have guessed that it would have been Bucks versus Raptors or something. And coming into this season with Brooklyn healthy and the Bucks again, you know, Bucks again dangerous, and the potential for other teams to get better, even without losing Hayward, I didn't think that making the Eastern Conference Finals was a lock. So from that perspective, I didn't expect that we're going to be a lock to make the Eastern Conference Finals. And I thought, you know, second round more than likely, and I still feel like second round is more than likely. I don't have, just because we're 500 right now, that doesn't really reflect what I think we'll be at the end of the season. We've definitely lost. Joe, you brought it up. We lost Hayward, but I think everyone needs to keep reminding themselves that although Hayward was crucial in our abilities to win regular season games, he played no part in either of our Eastern Conference Finals runs. Like literally no part. The first one, he wasn't available at all. And the second one, he played one game, and then we went to the Eastern Conference Finals without him, and he showed up on one leg in the middle of it. So, I mean, if I'm looking at our team last season, it was about, in the playoffs, it was about 8-man rotation, and everyone is still on the team, other than we swapped out Wanamaker for Pritchard, which is an upgrade. So, if I'm just saying, like, once we actually tighten this rotation, you're going to have Tatum, Brown, Smart, Kemba, Tice, Pritchard instead of Wanamaker, and then a couple other guys. We had Grant Williams and Semi both getting about 10 minutes in the playoffs. So whoever's going to fill the last couple roles, maybe it's Pritchard. Maybe it's Neesmith. Maybe it's Semi. Maybe it's someone we acquire with a TPE. But this team still is the same team once you actually tighten up the rotation. So I still think we'll be right in the mix of things.
Yeah. So if you had to rank all the teams in the league based on how likely their fate is to change based on roster changes, the Celtics would be probably ranked number one, right? Because of the potential looming with the traded player exception. So keeping with the hopes versus expectations, do you expect or hope that in a month or two's time, we'll be talking about, holy shit, like we're amazing again. You know, suddenly our expectations have changed and, we're looking for a definite Eastern Conference Finals berth. Do you hope for that to be the case, or with the TPE looming, do you expect that to be the case?
I was looking at the schedule, and we've got a cupcake schedule for the next little bit, right? Like, it's just totally possible that we could have just run off 8 straight, and the whole thing feels quite different.
Mm-hmm.
But the how is really important, and I really dislike how we've been losing these games. It's so predictable. Like, we get behind a little bit in the second quarter, and then about 10 in the third, and then we close it back to 5, and then we never really make up the difference. It's like there's no punch in this team.
Yeah.
There's no run. The runs don't come, right? We just kind of get behind and stay behind and trade buckets. And we could, if we'd won similarly, like where you just kind of get a 10-point lead and kind of nurse it to the end, I think I'd feel better, but still not great about it. Like, you want to start beating bad teams going away. You want to step on the throat, and if we'd just kind of squeaked out 8 wins, I think I'd still be tapping the alarm bell a little bit.
Labo, from what you were saying earlier, it sounds like you're pretty confident in that sort of top 7, top 8 rotation, and then you factor in the TPE there. It sounds like you expect that in a month or two's time, we will be talking about how improved the team is.
Maybe I'm being like blindly optimistic. I'm not normally blindly optimistic, but I do feel like I slant towards realism. And I'm just like, if you look at the Eastern Conference right now, there's only 5 teams that are even 500. Like, everyone, we're in the 5th seed right now with a 500 record. Above us is Indiana. They're a game over 500. And then you have Philly, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee. Philly, Brooklyn, and Milwaukee were all the teams I was worried about heading into the season. They're still the teams I'm worried about. So I'm not really worried about a record. Like, if any season, if you're gonna experiment with your rotation and showcase guys and use time to actually develop players, like giving Neesmith 20 plus minutes the last 3 games, which is a great thing, this is a time to do it. Like, I don't care. That's fine. We're gonna end up in the 4th or 5th seed. Home court advantage isn't gonna matter as much this season because most of these teams aren't gonna have crowds anyways. So it's fine. Like, this is a season to, this is a good thing, I feel like, to experiment and see what we have. But once it's time to actually start to win games, and this is the biggest thing, that I don't think most fans understand, is like, our main priority right now is not exclusively to win games. It's not. It really isn't. We're not exclusively trying to win games right now. We're trying to do a lot of stuff. We're trying to showcase guys. We're trying to give developmental minutes to Javonte Green, to see if we can trade him for a second rounder or give a couple minutes to Carson Edwards and Tremont Waters, who have no place in an NBA rotation, to be perfectly honest right now. But we're giving them minutes every once in a while anyways, because that's just what we have to do to set ourselves up and do our due diligence. So yeah.
Yeah, I guess also, you know, we also need to make sure that we develop Jeff Teague, for example. We don't want to miss the boat on Jeff out the league Teague.
Well, that's a perfect example of somewhere where it's like, okay, there's no reason to give Jeff Teague minutes after the trade deadline. Like, let's cut him out of the rotation and have Pritchard take all those minutes. And, you know, I'd also be in favor of minimizing Thompson's role if he's still here after the trade deadline and giving more of those minutes to Time Lord. I think there's a clear path to improving this team that I didn't think was here 2 years ago. I mean, and that's the difference to me.
Yeah, well, look, that's really good to hear. I'm probably a little bit more pessimistic than you, Liber, but so this is good. I'm glad we do this each week because I need to hear the sort of the more optimistic takes to sort of bring myself back up a little bit. And speaking of that, on the Jeff Teague front, last game, I think it was a DNP, didn't play at all against the Nuggets. We won that game, no surprise. And sorry, I have to pause here. Can we just celebrate the win against the Nuggets? If anyone has been listening to this podcast for any period of time, you know how important a win against the motherfucking Denver Nuggets is to me.
Yes.
My mate Dice, in shambles, so good. Like, if the Celtics were ever going to pull their heads out of their asses and just win one game in this brutal stretch, it had to be against the Nuggets. I was petrified. Anyway, I'm digressing here, but I had to pause it and just sort of tip the hat to that. But anyway, back to Jeff Teague. Didn't play against the Nuggets. May not have played so much at all in the loss to the Hawks if it wasn't for the absence of Kemba Walker and the foul trouble of Peyton Pritchard. And unfortunately, Peyton Pritchard had 5 fouls early in the fourth quarter, which led to a heavy dose of Jeff Teague and subsequently a loss, unfortunately. I'm not just blaming Jeff Teague, but I'm also kind of just blaming Jeff Teague. So there are some promising signs there that Brad Stevens is maybe more willing to partially or even fully cut him out of the rotation altogether, which is great. I just want to zoom in a little bit here on the last couple of games. So a comment here by LeetSpeak. I know we're missing Kemba Walker, Smart, and Tice, but this was such a winnable game, referring to the Hawks game. We better win on Friday, again against the Hawks. We just look like shit. And then to follow up, user AirMagSwag wrote, yeah, honestly, there isn't much to be said here. The guys on the floor show no heart, no grit, no Celtic pride. It's upsetting, honestly. Giving up 120 points is pretty shitty, but that's where we are. You can say whatever cliche makes you feel better, but this roster is flawed and we are going to keep losing games until changes are made. This team ain't it. I feel like we've thrown out some of the cliches already. So I suppose we've already addressed some of AirMagSwag's concerns here in maybe why we're not such a winning team at the moment. Lightbird, you mentioned the showcase side of things. Is there a message aside from that you would give to hopeless Celtics fans at this time to, you know, something to hold on to while we figure out what this team is and who we're showcasing and who we're potentially trading or acquiring? Well, or should they just figure it out for themselves?
No, I think the message there was spot on. We were missing three of our starters, and it's not a very deep team to begin with. So when you're missing three of your best players, you're going to probably struggle. And then just like the inconsistency from night to night, which isn't all just showcasing. It's not just all like giving minutes and developing. It is also because we have an injured team. I mean, really, I mean, it's the easiest answer, but it's one we can't really like brush aside. I think someone mentioned that like the foursome of Brown, Tatum, Smart, and Kemba have played like 30 minutes or something together this season, like something extremely, extremely small.
Yep,
if you're gonna, that's ridiculous. I mean, assuming they actually get healthy, I thought we've seen some, you know, last couple games he didn't play, but I thought we've seen some progress from Kemba, which is great. And obviously, Smart is a key part of our team when it's, you know, lacking talent at the moment. So those guys being out is pretty big, and that's how you end up getting someone like Teague with the minutes. Like, you had asked me beforehand, what is the difference between the Nuggets and the Hawks game? And that was exactly my answer. The difference is that we started Javonte Green and gave 31 minutes that went to Kemba, to Grant Williams, and Jeff Teague, who didn't even get any playing time the night before. I mean, that's a huge difference in you know, minutes and roster. So that's my takeaway, at least. It's like, just keep in mind, like, we're depleted we're playing around for roster and people are hurt and stuff.
See, this is where we sort of part company a little bit. Like, we've got Tatum and Brown. Okay, like, this is why I'm struggling to place where what sort of players I think they are, because yeah, we're depleted in that, in the sense that, sure, if we were matched up against the Bucks in the second round and Walker and Smart weren't available, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? That has a big impact on our team. We're talking about like a flipping Wednesday night against the Hawks, right? Like, at some point, like, two all-NBA guys are actually good enough to just drive regular season winning, unless they're not actually all-NBA guys. And I keep going backwards and forwards on this because, you know, sometimes it's really good, and they've got this history of having a lot of success at a young age, and then we've got this kind of a season to deal with, and it just doesn't compute. So, yeah, like, that's like, I'm just not that warm to the "we're depleted" excuse when we've got two apparently all NBA guys at, you know, at the two most important, you know, at the most important positions in the league. And yeah, it's just, it's something about this is just, is like, my fear is that it's just not stacking up, right? But I hope I'm wrong, you know? I'm still struggling to calibrate my actual expectations for these guys and what they are.
So here's where I think the Tatum and Brown situation is different this year to seasons past, and particularly compared to last year, where we had usually, if not both, a healthy Kemba and Hayward, one or the other. So this is per cleaningtheglass.com. Jaylen Brown is 95th percentile league-wide in usage rate. Tatum is 98th percentile league-wide in usage rate. And on top of that, their assist percentage, which is what percentage of their teammates' made shots did they assist on, Jaylen is in the 88th percentile. Tatum is in the 89th percentile. So the usage in terms of just their having the ball, their scoring the ball, and their assisting their teammates in their own scoring of the ball is just insanely high overall. And like, I feel like we're complaining about their teammates or their colleagues, right? You know, I think that's where we need to, in my opinion, direct the focus in terms of criticism away from the Jays and maybe at their associates on the Celtics, if you will, because they are playing at a high usage rate. They're dishing the ball. Their assists up despite those teammates, but we're not winning games. So I do think we need additions around the Jays to be successful there. I don't think they're this should be the main target of criticism.
Yeah, but I mean, another way to frame that, right, is a really high in usage, right? They're using the ball and they're not doing it. You know, like, that's not the fact that they've got a really high amount of usage doesn't absolve them of blame, you know, necessarily. Like, this is one of those cases where statistics can be used to prove opposing cases. But do you understand the point I'm making? It's like, if they're that good, why are we having, if they're not good enough to handle it? Because if there's in the 98th percentile, there's someone in the 99th, right? Mm-hmm. There's someone in the 100th percentile.
Yep.
There's someone in the 90th percentile. And are those teams more successful, right? Is Chris Paul in the 95th percentile or something like that? If so, it's sort of just, it's a data point that I'm using to kind of try and calculate where I think these guys are going to go. And I'm contrasting it with the fact that, my reflection on our run last year was that I think we would have beaten any of the other Eastern semifinalists except Milwaukee. I don't think we would have beaten them, right? I still think it's very I still can't believe we lost to Miami at all. So I don't see that as a fluke. That's another data point, right? And I'm just really struggling to reconcile those two right now.
Yeah, so Danger Cart was on the podcast and last time, and
I was there silently.
Yeah, thanks for those extra questions, Joe. That was nice in the chat there while Danger Cart was on. Thank you. Sorry, Larbird.
No, yeah, his point. I asked him that. I'm like, do you think they're both all NBA players? To your point, Joe, and he was pretty adamant that Tatum probably is, Brown's an all-star, but probably not an all-NBA. I don't know if they are both all-NBA players, to be honest. And with the last 11 games prior to this, at least, Tatum really did seem like he was struggling with post-COVID symptoms that limited him, and completely coincided with us going, you know, really struggling. But just, I mean, to your point, Joe, even if they were both all-star, all-NBA players, I mean, that doesn't mean that your team's going to be great. You look at a team like the Wizards, they have Beal and Westbrook and they're 9-17, or look at Luka, they're under 500 right now with Porzingis. I mean, there's a lot of teams right now that in the Heat are under 500 as well, but there's a lot of teams right now that are struggling despite having really good players. Just having two guys, I wouldn't say are struggling right now means they're not great. Just means that right now, the guys we're playing with him, and then the way we're using everyone isn't really working.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the truth somewhere in between these sort of polar positions we're staking out.
Here's another one I forgot to mention. What about the great Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier? That's a couple all NBA players who are under 500.
Where was that when we needed it? In a frustrating season, that is one of the most frustrating elements I can think of in recent memory.
I needed to have a quick sidebar on this. I'm sure we all listen to Bill Simmons's podcast, and the revisionist history on the Terry Rozier decision is driving me up the wall. None of us wanted Rozier back. Yeah. None of us did. If you say you did, you are lying. We could not wait to have him gone. We were so happy. Good luck, Charlotte. Yeah. Enjoy your salary cap killing point guard.
Do you remember he went on TV and like basically cussed out the Celtics, like his teammates and the organization?
So, Bill, I'm not a Bill Simmons hater. Like, he's part of the reason I'm a Celtics fan. Huge part of it, right? But come on, man. Like, we all wanted him gone. Like Ainge made mistakes, but like not re-signing Terry Rozier was never for a moment considered to be one of them at the time. Not even close. Like, I had queasiness in my guts about the Kyrie trade. Never for a second would I hesitated to not re-sign Rozier. Anyway, I've got some other stuff I want to cover about that pod.
He averaged 9 points off the bench that season, and not efficiently. He shot under 40%. I mean, this season he's shooting 50% from the field, 20 points, 45% from three. He looks great, but yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous to say that was a huge mistake at the time. Everyone was like, that's insane that Charlotte's giving him money.
And he's like, he's older player too, right? It's not like he came in the league like as a first year. I mean, he was at least a sophomore when he came in, right? Like, he might have even been a junior. Like,
he's 26 at the moment.
He's not a young guy. He's not like young. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah. Younger than Marcus Smart. Younger than Kemba Walker.
This is a little bit apropos of nothing. I'm just going to hijack things for a second, but I do. I just want to like give a little rap over the knuckles to my close personal friend, Kevin O'Connor.
Oh, sure.
For divulging the contents of our private conversation where I suggested to him that perhaps Al Horford could be a good candidate for the TPE. And I can't believe he just went and aired these intimate details of our chat with Bill Bloody Simmons. Ugh.
That's how these guys get on top, man.
I feel betrayed.
That's how these guys get on top. They prop themselves up on the shoulders of giants like yourself, Joe. And that's how they succeed.
Dude, Kevin O'Connor used to give me tips on my fantasy basketball team back in the old... He used to do this blog post every year about draft. And I reached out to him and I was like, who should I draft for my keeper league? He was giving me hot tips, man. I wouldn't have been a dominant champion without his help. So I'm a Kevin O'Connor fan, but clearly I'm not a close personal friend like Joe is.
No, we talk on the rig.
Strange times, very strange times.
I'm still pro that Al Horford thing. The more I think about it, the more I like it. By the way,
I'm pro change at this point, right? Let's we got to change it up. I know that like we've got to showcase our young talent. And it's not all about winning. Like, I agree with what you were saying earlier, La Bird. But also, as a simple-minded fan, I like when we win. I want to see us win. I know a lot of people feel that way. I know there's a majority of Celtics fans out there, including Bill Simmons and his dad, Kevin O'Connor, all very frustrated at the moment. And I'm feeling it too. Marcus Smart, we mentioned earlier, he has been out, and there is definitely a correlation with the dip in our, not just our defense, but the ticker, as you call it, Joe, in the team, particularly on the defensive end. But also at the moment, we're 28th in the league in assists. In fact, just to give you an idea of how bad we've been, so in the last seven games, so that's since the spirited victory over the Clippers, this is per stats.nba.com. Celtics have the 24th ranked net rating, the 25th ranked offense, somehow still the 12th ranked defense, the second worst assist to turnover ratio in the league, and we're 28th in assists. Now, Marcus Smart, and this is me hopping over to cleaningtheglass.com again, his assist to usage ratio. So that's measured by how often did a player get an assist given how long they had the ball. So Smart is in the 90th percentile in assist to usage ratio in the league. Plus, he's an all-NBA defender.
What's that stat again? I like it. So
assist to usage ratio, and it's measured by how often did a player get an assist given how long they had the ball. So it's a, right. I think it's a Cleaning the Glass exclusive. So good Ben stat. Ben Falk, I think his name is. Smart is in the 90th percentile in the league, and he's also an all-NBA defender. Our defense is down. Our assists are clearly down. We need this motherfucker back on the team.
You're telling me he's better than Javonte Green?
I think he might be a little bit, yes. And clearly, like Scal mentioned on the call today, Javonte, you know, he's busted a flat on a couple of those jumps off that left leg on a few occasions now. If he's not doing that, what's he doing? But to his credit, he has splashed a couple of wide open threes, which he wasn't doing last year. So I'm not too down on Javonte, but point is, we need Marcus Smart back on the team.
For sure.
Yep, that's my analysis.
I just miss the guy. Like, we were starting to get a bit grumpy with him, but our lives are so much better when he's in them. They just are. Mm. Come back, Marcus. We love you.
Joe, you were talking about how we're losing games and that's how that's become like a repetitive process. And you touched on the cadence of those losses, like when we're doing badly and when we're not fighting to recover from how badly we did earlier. So the second quarter is what you mentioned. What about technically, like defensively, offensively, what are you seeing or not seeing from the team that's causing us to lose games?
Well, one thing that sort of got pointed out tonight on the broadcast that I probably agree with is I don't know how well switching's working for us. Like there was a highlight that showed Pritchard. And I love Pritchard and I love the effort he's given against big guys, but there was an awful one of him. He got caught behind, I think it was Capella, and he just kind of gave no effort. It was Capella or John Collins, I forget who, and he just kind of gave no effort to get around and try and impact that play. And it does seem like a lot of the time we've got really small guys trying to rebound, and I just don't know that we can afford necessarily to do that. Like, if you've got a bunch of guys, if Smart's your point guard and Tice is your center, then you can kind of switch a lot more. But I just don't know that it's really working for us right now. For us, it's always rebounding. And it just seems to be this, like, I probably make this up. Like, it probably happens to every team. But it just feels like, man, any loose, like, 50-50 ball, it just feels like nothing comes to us right now, you know? And I just feel like the ball finds sort of energy, you know, and it really feels like a lack of energy right now, which is not technical analysis at all.
Well, clearly, Aaron Nesmith is the answer to our prayers there because
he gave plenty of offensive
rebounds, lots of energy.
He's the cosmic Aerosmith solution to this problem, this energy based problem. Yeah.
He really did. He helped. So that's probably what I'm seeing. But it's, you know, the game actually turns on these funny things. Like, I don't know if you guys noticed or not. I felt like the game turned, and there's this particular moment in the second quarter. We were up, I want to say, by 3. We got the rebound. Two guys went after it. Nesmith went after it with his boundless energy. He caught it. He tried to bring it down. And I think he dropped it onto the shoulder of Tristan Thompson. The ball came free. And then one of the Hawks just came in and laid it up and in. And we kind of never, like, recover. Like, I honestly feel like games turn on those little points of carelessness so often. That stuff just seems, I'm probably making it up, you know? Like, it's probably not reality, but it just feels like that stuff is just, it feels like we're on the wrong side of that ledger so often.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like those moments stand out, but our pick and roll defense. So against the Hawks tonight, the Trae Young Capella combination just shredded us, and Tristan Thompson just had no chance of containing Trae Young in the pick and roll. Brad Stevens, he brought in Grant Williams like far too late into the game, in my opinion, to sort of address that and actually make a more switchable coverage to cover that pick and roll, but it was way too late at that point. But I feel like we watched Tristan Thompson just struggle with that coverage for three quarters tonight, and we've seen similar combinations, CP3 and DeAndre Ayton, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, even Fox and Rashawn Holmes to a lesser extent. These elite, you know, point guard, half-decent center, pick-and-roll combinations destroy us, and we just don't have the ability to cover them. And if we trap someone like a Trae Young or a CP3, we end up giving up a dunk because our rotations suck balls. And, you know, none of our guys can recover and rotate and cover the whoever receives the pass of the trapped point guard in this case. So there's a lot of defensive issues there that even with the return of Marcus Smart, I don't know if we can address that. It's more systematic. And, you know, Brad Stevens has addressed the lack of practice time, but I feel like that's something that impacts all teams. So I don't know. I don't have an answer. I just feel like our defense sucks, and I don't know if there's anything that we can do about it. And that's a big problem. And it goes beyond hustle and loose balls and things like that. It's a systemic issue that I'm worried about long term.
Yeah. It really does help to have somebody who can bust up a screen, or at least it's, you know, we talk about impacting the ball. Like this, it's just we don't talk about it a lot, I suppose, but you hear it on the broadcast a lot. And it just feels like it's something so obvious and untechnical, but it just feels like we just don't start trying until it's too late. You know, if I'm to try and diagnose it, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I might be, you know, sounding too overly optimistic. I do want to clarify that I don't think anyone outside of Tatum and Brown is an ideal fit next to them on this team. I don't think it's the ideal personnel. I mean, my whole thing is just I think that if we really wanted to just like grind away at 50-ish wins, we could put together a really tight rotation and do it, probably burn out Brown and Tatum in the process. But really, I mean, what I'm more saying is that, like, we do need to make a move at some point. I don't think that this roster as is makes sense around those guys. I think we definitely have to fill roles, but, you know, like, had we just spent their first part of the season not giving any minutes to Pritchard and just playing Teague a lot and not giving any minutes, any minutes to Nesmith, then, you know, we wouldn't really have any, you know, not playing Time Lord, just playing just Tyson and Thompson. Then we wouldn't have gotten to look at these young guys and they wouldn't be gaining trade value. And like, that's the whole idea that we had to do. We had to like give minutes to guys like Grant Williams and see what they can do, even if playing Grant Williams isn't ideal for anyone right now.
Hey, I'm still sensitive. I'm still a believer. I'm still a Grant Williams believer.
Joe is a Grant Williams
killer case.
No, that's good. I'm not saying you shouldn't be that. I mean, you should be a Grant Williams believer. I mean, that guy... I just did this like long post on Reddit where I was like, who are the expendable players on this team?
Good segue.
If I'm looking at who I think our final rotation is, I think Tyson, Time Lord are the two bigs that I want. So I would see Thompson as the odd man out. Obviously, Teague isn't important with Pritchard getting better. I don't think that Teague's really anyone that's important. Edwards and Waters, I don't think they're important. I don't think that Semi, although Semi has made strides and I think he's a solid role player, I don't think he's necessarily essential if Nesmith and Langford can play at a high level later in the season. So, I mean, if I'm looking at who I can upgrade, who I can use to upgrade without really like feeling bad about it, those are all the guys that I'd be willing to include. The only other guy that I had up there was Grant Williams. And Grant Williams, I think, is an interesting prospect who might have a various ceiling depending on how you look at him. I wouldn't feel happy about trading him. He's 22 years old. He could be a good player, but he's like, to me, he's like the real in-between guy who could be good down the line, or he might just be a throw-in. Like, it's hard to really know with him.
Yeah, so yeah. I wanted to touch on Nesmith a little more because he's kind of been, you know, if we're talking about, you know, pieces of hope, areas of hope to cling on to, Aaron Nesmith has definitely been, you know, that for Celtics fans in the last three games or so. Does that change your opinion on how expendable he is? Is it better that he's playing this well for our team and for him to be on our team going forward? Or is it better that he's playing this well for his trade value? And does that question even make sense?
For Nesmith in particular?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, my hope is that he can step into a role. I'm like strongly opposed to giving up any lottery pick midway through the rookie season. I mean, we went through that with Joe Johnson and like Chauncey Billups and stuff. That's not fun. So, I mean, that's not to say that Neesmith will be a great player, but you know, there was people who were ready to give up on him when he had like the equivalent of like 4 basketball games. If he was on a bad team, I guess the Celtics are kind of a bad team right now, but if he was drafted on a team that was conventionally a bad team, like a Timberwolves or something, he probably would be getting like 25, 35 minutes per game, something like that, just out of the gate. Cause it's like, yeah, he's a lotto pick and we have no one else. Let's just give him lots of minutes. And so people were ready to give up on him like 140 minutes into his career. It just seems crazy to me. Like you have to give that guy some developmental minutes. And like, if you're going to base your evaluation on him of just the last 3 games, like if this was only for like, this was his first 3 games of his entire career, you'd probably be like, all right, this is a promising young prospect. He's got a good motor. He like surprising hustle. I didn't think I would see that kind of hustle out of him that we saw tonight. Going for offensive rebounds, his shot, he's only shooting like 30 something percent from 3, but it's not terrible for a rookie. Like I would be completely comfortable with that if this was his first 3 games.
Yeah. I'm not like overwhelmed by what I've seen, but it's been encouraging the last couple of games. If he runs around and tries to grab every offensive rebound, you know, it's probably going to help his cause a little bit, to be honest, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, for him, he came in as a shooter, right? If he can shoot, he's like, as advertised, he's valuable. If he doesn't shoot, well, guess what? He's out of the league after his rookie contract, right? Like, it's just as simple as that. Can he shoot? And there's only one way to find out, and that's to let the guy take a few shots. There were a couple times tonight, actually, on a fast break, I noticed one time Jalen, he didn't see him. He was going to the left corner. Stuff like that, that kind of annoys me for him a little bit, you know, because I actually want to see him take that shot. Like,
I agree. That was frustrating.
Yeah, I do love about Neesmith that his reaction to, and I'm sure the coaching staff have a lot to do with this, but his reaction to, oh, I suddenly can't shoot, is just to try extremely hard in every other facet of the game. And that has actually been impactful in the time that he's had and the increased time that he's had in the last few games. But you nailed it, Jayla. That shot has to come along. He's got to find that shot again. And I've said this before on this podcast, but if you look at his college highlights compared to his NBA minutes so far, the shot looks clunkier. It seems like there's a hitch in it, or I don't know, he's just slower to get it off. And I think a lot of that probably, obviously not knowing anything about what it's like to play in the NBA, but I would assume that a lot of it has to do with a lack of confidence and just general nerves going in. So hopefully he can develop a little bit of confidence off his stellar play in other facets of the game. Hopefully that translates over to his shot. But I think as long as we continue to be a showcase team, as Larbert has put it, then we're going to continue to see a lot of Aaron Neesmith minutes, which is fine. I think we need things to be hopeful for and to be happy about. I want to move on because there's been a lot of talk on Twitter and Celtics Reddit and all corners of the Celtics-based internet about Brad Stevens. I've got some comments here from the people of Celtics Reddit regarding the notion of firing Brad Stevens. No judgment to these folks. Or on these folks, everyone's entitled to an opinion, and it can be cathartic to get them out when the team is as frustrating as they have been currently. That said, so guys, I want to read off a couple of these comments on Brad Stevens to you and have you either defend Brad Stevens or agree with the comments or however you feel about them. So the first one is from Reddit user Brad Stevens, who writes, "What a fucking joke. Brad Stevens was this game," referring to the Hawks game. "I get that we are down 3 starters, but the first half rotations were really good," inferring the second half rotations were not good at all. Comments there. Is Brad Stevens to be criticized for how this game turned out?
Yeah, I don't want to see Jeff Teague.
But Pritchard had 5 fouls. Like, what's he going to do?
Yeah, I'd play Pritchard, right? Like, guess what? You know what happens if he gets 5 fouls? He's out of the game, right? Do you know how else he gets out of the game? If you bench the bloody guy, you know, like that's my position on foul trouble generally. I think it coaches let it influence their substitution patterns too much.
Okay, love it.
Sorry, go there.
No, I mean, I just feel like I'm just gonna keep repeating the same stuff. I mean, against the Wizard, we played 15 guys. I mean, if this was the playoffs, would he be doing that? Probably not. I just don't think that I don't think that, I mean, maybe I'm just, maybe it's like a conspiracy theory. It sounds like a conspiracy theory, but I really do think that like Ainge and Brad probably sit down and say, all right, what is our goals? We need to take a look at what we have and let's like tinker and play around and see what we have. And that doesn't necessarily directly correlate to immediate wins. So, you know, I thought Denver was interesting because Denver, we had DMPs to five guys. And that's the kind of rotation that I would expect us to have come playoff time. And we won that game. Mm. I just think that's a big difference. Like the night before against the Wizards, we had 15 guys that we played. I mean, that's just not, I don't know if that's really on Brad. Like someone, I made the comment somewhere on Reddit where I was like, I don't know if I'd really do anything differently. And I don't know if I'd change much, at least until March. I just think that like, this is what you have to do. You have to keep giving guys minutes. And if that means, you know, giving 25 minutes to Grant one night and 25 minutes to Nesmith the next night. And then once Romeo comes back, you DMP someone to get Romeo minutes. Like, I'm going to be pissed off if we don't give any minutes to Romeo when he comes back. We want to, like, we definitely want to see what he is, right? So yeah. that's not like a direct path to winning. Let's give Romeo Langford 25 minutes, but that's what we have to do. We have to give him 25 minutes just to see what he is.
Yeah. Okay, so this one's a little bit more directed at Brad Stevens as a person. This is from CJ Mustard, who writes, teams take on the personality of their coach. Brad is soft. The team is soft. He should just go coach kindergarten intramurals, where his howdy doody G. Willikers personality would be best served, and let us get a real leader of men at the helm. Thoughts on this comment by CJ Mustard?
I've felt those feelings.
I just feel like we've been so spoiled by Brad Stevens. I mean, we've had so much success that could be argued was major overachieving, especially three seasons ago where we had Brown and Tatum, no Kyrie, no Hayward, and went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, in a large part because we have a great coach. And I just think that people are like, they set their expectations really high after something like that and forget that the expectations were very, very, very low and Brad surpassed them. So it's like, remember that we surpassed those expectations. That doesn't now mean that, oh yeah, well, we made the Eastern Conference Finals with a couple 19-year-olds. That means that we're an Eastern Conference Finals team. No, I mean, we overachieved. Like, I mean, that's my take on it. I think Brad's a great coach. I just think that, you know, the coach is an easy scapegoat.
Yeah. Joe, anything to add?
No, I think, though my sentiments have been very similar, you know, in the lizard brain, at least, they're very similar. I agree with Larry, ultimately. Like, we do have to remember we exceeded expectations for, like, five straight years, and then we had 18-19, you know, and then we had last year where we exceeded expectations slightly. Doesn't mean the guy's without fault, though. It's the same as Ainge, right? Like, Ainge has got some blemishes on the resume, but, like, ultimately, man, like, the Celtics have been a really fun team to cheer for because they've been well-managed and coached for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm. But there was that first playoff run that we had where we were actually actively trying to tank, and like, Danny Ainge was pretty much... He kept, like, dropping hints that we were trying to tank.
To get Justice Winslow, who's the heat guy? Every time
they like everyone in like the larger media scape at that time was like, Boston doesn't have a single starter on their entire team. There's not a single starting caliber player on that entire team, and somehow Brad, in large part because we traded for Isaiah and he, you know, surpassed expectations off our bench that season, we made the playoffs. It was just like he makes the most out of very little, and then people forget that we made the most out of very little. And I would expect that once the playoffs come around, we're going to surprise people again and go way further than people expect us to.
Mm. So this one's from user Not One Fuck. They write, this game was 100% on Brad's lineups. The players who were doing well were sat for players who were playing like shit. Javonte Green, Grant Williams, and Jeff Teague all did not deserve the minutes they were given. Also, while Thompson made some nice plays offensively, he was absolutely massacred on defense, like we mentioned earlier, all game, but yet still had way more minutes than Robert Williams. So I'm going to add a question to the end of this comment because we talked about the rotations already. What do you think the justification is for Brad Stevens playing Tristan Thompson way more minutes than he plays Rob Williams?
I don't like it. That reminds me of the whole Mark Blount, Kendrick Perkins thing. Like, I'm definitely
deep cut.
I'm definitely in the camp that's like, yeah, we're feeding Thompson minutes. I really want to see Robert get more. I think Mike and Scal were talking about that tonight as well. They're like, really want to see Robert get some more minutes. I don't know. What is the justification? Are we just trying to keep Thompson's trade value up to a certain level prior to the trade deadline? I wouldn't rule that out. I mean, that was what we did with Blount, really. I mean, that's exactly what we did with Blount. We kept giving him minutes until we could trade him.
In theory, Thompson can hang a little bit on the perimeter. Is a lot stronger. What to me, Williams's big minus is he's just kind of light in the bum, and he doesn't really own his space down there very well. Thompson is in theory a lot better than that, right? So, in theory, Thompson should help to rectify some of the lack of ticket issues, but it just doesn't seem to be translating that much. I feel like all our best moments come with Tice on the floor.
Yeah.
Tice's center, you know?
Scal kind of alluded to that tonight, too. He was like, kind of, I got the vibe from him. Like, I don't know. I mean, I was reading between the lines, but he had made some comments that, like, they're still concerned that if they give too much to Time Lord, that he just will stop having the same level of effort. Like, effort's still a concern with him. So it's like, they don't want to just give him 30 minutes right now. They want to make sure that he pays his dues and. You know, that's. Did you hear that part? I mean, that was just a kind of comment that Scal made at some point.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense, actually, because you want the incentive for him there, right? His energy that he brings off the bench is such an important factor, and to take that away from him and the team, I think would be huge. So I hadn't considered that. So that was interesting to hear today. Got one more comment here from those concerned about Brad Stevens. This is from user For Zareem. They write, Trey and Gallo are two of the worst defenders in the NBA. Did it feel as though the Celtics were going at them? No, it did not. I don't know what our offense was trying to do, but it wasn't doing it, and our defense was even worse. Brad this year as a coach has been like Blake Griffin as a player, a sudden and deep drop-off. Without repeating anything we've already addressed here, guys, is any response you've got for Zareen here on that comment, particularly the Blake Griffin comparison?
Well, I mean, sometimes I think that sort of analysis smells a little simplistic. It might not be. I might be being a bit unfair there, but I'm more inclined to take note of something that Scal said, which is like, hey, we're trying to attack with a high pick and roll all the time. We need to get the ball going side to side a little more. And I kind of agree with that. And Scal's comment, like, I just attacked Trae Young, is something you would do in a high pick and roll. And because one of the things I feel like offensively is holding us up is just our speed of play. Like, I just feel like we're not playing quick enough. And when you go mismatch hunting, I've never liked it when we start going mismatch hunting. It tends to result in the team kind of losing its mojo. It hasn't been the identity of this team when it's been successful. So I'm going to give Brad a pass on that.
All right, so just to wrap the whole Brad Stevens should be fired thing up, there was a post by Willis050 to Reddit. It was a good time to post this, I thought, because the title of the post was, if we fired Brad, who would we want as a coach? And I'm not going to read off any comments from that post, but if you go and look in there, there are zero suggestions. There's literally no name put forward as to who we could hire as a better coach, only that the question was put, how many teams would immediately fire their coaches in order to hire Brad Stevens as a replacement coach? Yeah. So that kind of sums up the whole thing. I think you mentioned earlier, Brad Stevens is an easy scapegoat given the current, you know, crisis with the team and everything. But I don't think that's the solution at this point. No one's going to come in. I'm not going to bring in, you know, Kenny Atkinson or whatever his name is and expect a better result. So,
Yeah, Kenny Atkinson's going to step in and suddenly Javonte Green and Grant Williams are going to be superstars. I mean, it's silly.
Yeah. So normally this is where we'd cut to the miscellaneous section of this podcast. I have no notes at this point because I've just been feeling too dreary based on the recent results of this team, aside from the Nuggets win, which has been, you know, incredible. Any other points you guys want to bring up before we wrap this one up?
Nah, man. I'm good.
We're tired.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Tastes Like Honey Nut, who points out that the only time he's ever received Reddit gold is for saying Larboard 33 is a cunt. I just want to let him know that I'm the one who gave him Reddit gold, and you're welcome.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that exchange. Yeah. Nice guy. Nice guy. All right.
He's not wrong.
I responded to that person and said, look, the internet is full of cunts, but what do you want us to do? Just like clear all the cunts out of the way so you can have a good time? It's not how it works.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah. Thank you for defending me. I appreciate it, buddy.
I'm just defending the cunts of the internet. I'm one of them at times. All right. We've
good place to wrap it up.
Yeah. I'm going to have to put the explicit stamp on this podcast. That's fine. That's going to do it for this one. Thank you for
Your
tuning
mom
in.
Don't listen to this one.
Yeah. Hi, Joe's mum.
I don't think she's ever listened.
All right, that's going to do it for this one. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to support the pod, the best way is just to subscribe on whatever platform you use for your podcast. And if you're feeling very generous, leave us a nice rating and review. The Celtics have the Hawks, Pelicans, and Mavericks coming up this week. All super winnable games under normal circumstances. So we'll see how that goes. And we'll be back in a week or so to break it all down. Joe, Larbird, love your work, guys. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Nice. And first person to leave a Reddit comment that Larboard 33 is a c- gets gold from me. So
there you go.
Interact with us. Leave us comments. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from the fans.
We do. We do. All right. Until next time, folks. Go Celtics. Peace.